Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002 and goes out every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week, Bristol artist Steve Lacey, who takes us on a journey through some of his research. Plus our weekly news update with Jason Yannakopoulos. Dialect's produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. And I'll repeat that number at the end of the show. But we start with Steve Lacey, Bristol artist. Hi, Steve, and welcome to Dialect.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank
First of all, what got you into being an artist? I mean, you were on a few weeks ago, and we only just dipped briefly into what you do.
Yeah, I got a job with security, and I had a lot of time. And within that time, I was being a bit creative, putting things together, like we talked about last time, models and what have you. And obviously, with the models, certain models, I've done research for that model. And now... Today, we're talking about one of the main models I made was the New World Order one.
Okay, the New World Order. That's a word we hear bandied about sometimes by people who are pretty crazy. But is there anything really such thing as the New World Order?
Well, I thought like you did. I thought people pracking on about it, Bush Senior and all the rest of it, and our John Bush as well, John Prescott as well, talking about the New World Order one. When you look into it, it's a bit bigger than just the word. You know, it's actually... an agenda, what's happening beyond politics, which involves the United Nations. They're seeming to be funneling their projects through the United Nations, NATO, and it's quite chilling when you do the research.
Nasty. Yeah. The most chilling thing about it is it seems to be totally taboo in the mainstream media. You never hear the New World Order, really, other than by maybe a Prime Minister mentioning it in a sort of nice context, or Bush Senior mentioning it and saying it's all going to be wonderful, this New World Order. Yeah. But, I mean, you have to go back a few hundred years, don't you, to look at where some of this started. I mean, I would agree. I think there definitely is some sort of parapolitical force out there that really renders most of our politics pretty useless, and yeah, some sort of pantomime going on for us. The mainstream media don't question it. They go along with the lie. And I think you have to go back to look at the Rothschild family in Germany, in Hamburg, I believe, and their influence has been immense. I mean, what they started to do was to be the moneylenders to kings, and then to, for example, get a very great deal of influence in Britain here. And many people believe that they were behind the British Empire. They financed the British Empire. They understood that if you control the money, exactly. In fact, there's a quote, I believe, from one of the Rothschild family saying, if I control a nation's money, I care not who makes the laws.
Exactly.
And you can see that almost playing out today with the bankers, can't you?
Exactly.
You know, they just do what they want. I mean, they get piddling little fines, don't they? Tiny fines. And that actually is the institution that's being fined, not the people that have committed the crimes.
Yeah.
So they are completely insulated. They're above the law. You've got the Rockefellers in the United States.
Yeah.
They made most of their money through oil, but then they've come to a similar position. They got out of oil. That's boring. And then they got into doing banking. So it's much easier. You press a button, you make the money. You don't have to get any oil out of the ground.
Yep.
It's much, much easier to be a banker. So that's what the Rockefellers moved into. And now, only last year, we heard that the Rockefellers and the Rothschild families, these two immensely wealthy dynasties that are just off the scale, you don't even see them on the Sunday Times rich list. They don't appear there. Any of these rich lists, because they hide their massive wealth.
Exactly.
A lot of it is shrouded in secrecy. So what they did last year, Steve, is they got together in one company for the first time, one business,
right,
which is overtly there to buy up distressed assets. That's to say, as the financial crisis kicks in, a lot of businesses go bust, a lot of them quite big companies, the Rothschild and the Rockefellers joint firm will buy up those
scoop
for peanuts.
Yep.
And then they're buying those assets very, very cheaply. So that's just my take on it. I wonder what you think of what I had to say there. Because
I think you hit it more on the nail.
Particularly the British Empire, because we're given this kind of thing, oh, the British would be amazing. You know, actually, it was financed with money.
Exactly.
They had to build boats, didn't they? They had to educate people so they could travel. They had to be, and Britain, of course, was at the time, the centre for the Industrial Revolution and for technology, and that was a large part of it.
Exactly. And you also find that these big farms you're talking about also fund both sides of the wars.
So really?
So it doesn't matter who wins. And like, for example, Prescott Bush, George Bush's grandfather, funded Hitler with fuel, and IBM as well. You can go right back into
That's right. Prescott Bush, for example, he tried to organise a coup in the United States as well before the Second World War, as well as being prosecuted under the Trading with the Enemy Act twice during World War II.
Yep.
So there's your Bush family, pretty clear example.
Exactly.
A few of these dynasties really do seem to control things. But, I mean, I look at Bush Jr. and I think this guy is not really able to organise, you know, an event in a brewery.
He's a likeable fool, isn't he?
but he's not trying to con people. He was easy to manipulate.
Exactly.
I think that's actually what was going on there. Anyway, look, getting back to some of your stuff, I know you're interested in this thing, the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah.
And the Federal Reserve. So what sort of power do they have, and what are those organisations?
Well, interestingly enough, the Council of Foreign Relations, when you look at what they control, what they bind together, obviously the head being David Rockefeller, then you have the whole media. You have the whole military, you have universities, you have every single facet of our life are controlled or signed up to the Council of Foreign Relations.
So what does it actually do? What is it? The CFR, it's called in the States, isn't it? It's based in the US.
Yeah.
And it seems to me to be a sort of shadow government run by big business in America.
Yeah, with agendas set for them. So they're scientists, when you talk about climate change or food, the scientists are obviously paid in the pay packet of these. So their reward, their grants and their awards, one of you, they have to go along with the system, be it false. And that's where you have to question most things.
Oh, you must, especially if they control the CFR control. It's a bit like a secret society. People never really discuss it. Hardly anybody has heard of it, you know. So, but also the Federal Reserve there.
Yeah.
They're thought to be a US federal bank because it's got the name federal in the title, but actually they're a private bank, aren't they? How are they connected up to the CFR then?
I think they're all connected because they're private organisations, they're private bankers. They have their own agenda. They create depressions and recessions and what have you, and it's all one big plan they're concocted together. I mean, there've been people like Ron Paul that's crying out for audit the Fed.
He's a Republican. He stood stood to be a presidential candidate, but didn't really make it, did he?
But with the media doing their bits, you got no chance. Plus, the votes can be controlled and tampered with. You know what I mean?
Voting machines in the US can, certainly.
Exactly.
Postal votes here can be and have been tampered
with. So you got no chance. Even though he is been a great.
So that's
president.
America for you. I mean, you've got all these government institutions. You've then got the Federal Reserve. You've got the Council on Foreign Relations. And really, what the Council on Foreign Relations seems to be, because it's absolutely swimming in money, in cash. As much of America becomes more and more impoverished, these guys are holding the loot. Mm-hmm. And they can do whatever they want. They fund all sorts of policy groups, this kind of thing, from behind the scenes. Now, there is an equivalent in London.
There is. What's the name again?
It's in St. James. It's called the Royal Institute for International Affairs.
That's the one.
It's a very posh part of London, just over the road from Prince Charles's official residence.
Right.
And it's kind of set up as, it looks very innocuous, but they are also nicknamed Chatham House. They're called Chatham House. And that's where the whole thing of Chatham House rules comes from, if you've ever heard that expression. And also you will see Chatham House on the BBC regularly. Something kicks off in Ukraine, Chatham House come on and tell you about it. Well, they are the British equivalent of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
They are the big business, including the BBC, are signed up to it. The BBC helped fund it, believe it or not, even though it's nothing to do with government. It's completely not independent. It's just pushing the interests of the big corporations that fund it. So we've got something like that similar over here. But you said you wanted to do a bit of joining the dots together when you set off on this mission.
I did.
So how have you managed to do that? And have you been successful?
Well, not successful, no, but I really would like to highlight the dangers. Like, for example, many years ago, you never heard of a child contracting cancer, or it's 1 in 100 getting cancer. Now it's 1 in one in 50. And now, I heard a couple of weeks ago, they expect us to accept one in three in the next 10 years.
But isn't
years.
That because people are living longer, Steve?
Well, having cancer, no, I think this is directed at the general population, the whole population, rather than just the elderly. And a lot is to do with what we ingest and what we're given. I.e. your aspartame, your vaccinations, your fluoride, and all these toxins that our body's absorbing.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of toxicity out there. That's true. Formaldehyde, for example, in new clothes. You know, say, for example, you buy a sofa.
Yeah.
That seems like a nice... It's got loads of formaldehyde because it's a preservative in there. I would suggest people wash everything before they actually put it in their homes, including carpets, things like that. It might sound a bit extreme, but that's another toxin. There's loads of these. Why aren't the government actually prohibiting these then?
I don't really know. I whether or not people are not campaigning enough, whether or not the people, the organisations, like for example, the Cyril company, the FAO, the food company, just withdrew it, you know, and it was Donald Rumsfeld, I think, that put it through, and then he became a chairman of it. I mean, it is a...
This is a very, very dangerous area we're getting into,
isn't it?
Which is where you've got food companies and other big corporations that are trying to do things that they know the government's going to resist and the people are going to resist.
Yeah.
So what they do is they put their people in the government.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. And same with Monsanto as well.
Now, also, you know, with food and other toxins, you mentioned briefly aspartame there. What is aspartame and where can we find it?
Well, it's in most of our food. I mean, you try and buy a chewing gum now that hasn't got aspartame, you can't buy it.
You're right. You know, I had a look the other day.
Yeah, your choice is taken away.
It was a long queue at the checkout at the supermarket, and I thought, I'll have a look at some of the ingredients of these chewing gums that they're sticking here for me to buy.
Yeah.
And not a single chewing gum is now sold without aspartame.
You wouldn't get it, no. And they say, very cleverly, this is for your health. We're looking after you. So a lot of reverse psychology is going on with the...
So please, listeners, do keep an eye open.
You have to keep an eye open. And especially the vaccinations as well. The mercury, the levels, you know. I mean, I read Andrew Wakefield's book the other week. Fantastic book. And I won't go into too much, but there was more links to the toxicity in the vaccine than were being presented, you know. And the fact is the medical company didn't want him to research all these links because they're all basically the same thing, caused by the same problem. And that's why they had just got rid of him. And he's the fall guy for any time you go for vaccination. He said, oh, my child have a private one. No, that guy's been struck off now. He's nothing to do with it. In reality,
the medical profession has squeezed him out in a way because of the pressure from the big drug companies.
Exactly.
The trouble. Merrick, they are so powerful now, aren't they?
Yeah.
They seem to be in... They've got so much money, these big corporations. Yeah. They seem to be able to infiltrate quite easily various professional bodies. I mean, you know...
Very easily. And this is the problem. I mean, because we're just... Because it's such a huge machine and trying to battle it one by one is difficult. So we need...
But I mean, hang on, Steve, though, because smallpox, for example, the vaccine for that is surely still a very useful thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But the
smallpox is a killer disease.
Oh,
and cowpox was discovered to, you know, if you have a little bit of cowpox, that means that you won't catch smallpox for most of the rest of your life. So that's a good thing, surely.
Oh, yeah, surely. I'm talking mainly on the MMR one, which is the triple vaccine, to a one-year-old or one-and-a-half-year-old child. The toxicity in those three combined vaccinations is too much.
I think the thing is, we need to know exactly what's in there before we inject it into our bodies.
Yeah, I mean, the immune system's not built.
Children. I mean, they've got no way of knowing what's being done to them.
In the States and in here, that's why the increase in autism is like hundreds of percent, you know, and the other... follow-up stuff.
Well, there is some doubt about the link to autism, but I would say, you know, we need to be cautious. And certainly the way I would suggest listeners look up Dr. Wakefield on YouTube or something and have a look at it, because you're not going to see him on the television.
And you
won't
see him.
Completely wiped him out.
Exactly.
Okay, so also the UN, that's a big one, isn't it? Because that should be helping the world go towards peace. Now, I can remember back in the early 1990s, we had something called Perestroika, and there was going to be the peace dividend. Everything was going to chill out. We didn't have to have a Cold War with Russia again. Yeah. literally just in the last few weeks. Exactly. It's all ramping up again, isn't it? NATO doing exercises in Ukraine, even though it's not part of NATO.
Yeah.
And Russian moving troops up to the border.
Yeah.
The referendum in Crimea. It's all starting to hot up all over the Black Sea Fleet, because the Russian Black Sea Fleet is very powerful in the Middle East. It goes down into the Middle East and it can tip the balance in the Mediterranean, as it did last summer over Syria, shooting down two cruise missiles that were heading for Damascus. So
it's a very tender time to be in that. I mean,
are the UN actually going to do the job, Steve?
I don't think so. I just think that my personal opinion is they're on the other side. They want this.
You know what? You've just reminded me of something. In Haiti, weren't they responsible for spreading cholera?
Exactly.
And then none of the officials at the UN would actually answer for this.
No.
This strain of cholera that appeared was tied directly to the UN.
Yep.
And it was released by them in Haiti. This is appalling. These people, who is inside the UN? Who is controlling it?
Well, every nation signs up to it. But what it is now, they seem to be running everything. This is the problem.
Really?
With Agenda 21.
Okay, that's a UN thing. What is Agenda 21?
Well, basically, it's a whole list of things they're coming up with. And they're seizing land and saying, we're taking this land for to keep the natural resources or whatever. And they're buying it. And they're buying up stocks in land. Stuff that should be a sovereign country should take care of, you know. But they're going into every facet. Health, the whole thing, you know, which is quite worrying. And where's it going to end? Where's it going to stop? Who are they accountable for?
This is Central Control Command Agency, broadcasting from the year 2025 by the use of dimensional time frequency transmission. People, you must prepare yourself for a nuclear exchange on U.S. soil anytime now. This is a false flag. It's important you remove yourself from populated cities, prepare food, stock, and water emergency medical kits. Bush administration and the Obama administration have already been charged with crimes against humanity, funding and causing terror attacks across the world for many years. All globalist assets have been frozen, buildings closed. The United Nations has been dismantled and placed in a neutral country. Segments of the British and US Army will aid your groups under the Central Control Command Agency. Wait for further instructions. Good luck.
Well, that was great, Steve.
Where did that come from? We just interrupted then.
That sounded a bit like you. Now, I was getting a little bit worried at the start there, but it was pretty clear straight away that it's a bit of a spoof. But, you know, you're talking about some interesting little, but also some puzzling terms there. The false flag, what's that about?
A false flag, basically, when a country creates a seemingly terror attack, but created by themselves in order to go into a war which they already pre-planned.
Right, so they're blaming it on somebody else, basically. So if someone blows up a bomb and points the finger at someone else saying, it was him.
It was him, and there's a history
now,
of this.
That is like a bit of psychopath behaviour, isn't it?
Well, yeah, definitely. And that is what we're dealing with when we're dealing with the elite, the power elite. We're dealing with...
It's like self-harming, isn't it?
Exactly.
Isn't that a similar thing? For one person to do it, it's like, well, you start stabbing yourself and you're saying, oh, look what someone's done.
It's very difficult for people to understand, because we all suffer what we call normalcy bias, where if it affects our world, you just reject it straight away.
Yeah.
Unless you research and do more research, listen to credible people, you know, scientists and professors.
On the BBC?
Yes. Well, sometimes. Yeah, PhDs, you know. I mean, people who are talking the truth, you know. I mean, it's easy to...
But the thing is, there's lots and lots of people that come across as very convincing who actually are just part of this globalist system. I mean, what are the globalists?
The globalists are basically have an agenda. And it's quite worrying, really. But I'm joining the dots because of the research I'm doing. And a lot of it includes depopulation. I mean, it's horrific stuff, you know. I mean, via food... toxins.
So you're saying that this is not just to make money, it's also somehow deliberate.
It's something deliberate. I mean, they call people who are not part of any establishment or not knowing worthless eaters. I think it's concocted by Sir Russell, Lord Russell, I think. Worthless eaters, you're not worth anything. You're just wasting our time, and we'd best depopulate. That kind of a Malthusian way of thinking, you know.
The Malthusians, that's a good word, isn't it? Who are they?
Oh, that's who are in charge of us at the moment, and that way of thinking, you know.
The Malthus, I think it was, the Malthus, that came up with that. Okay, so also, I mean, you mentioned briefly the universities, but I mean, let's try and bring it down to home here in Bristol a bit. Yeah. The people that own and run Bristol are not the politicians, it's the merchant venturers, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I think it is. Yeah. You look at them, they have got massive investments in all these big investment banks. The ones that are also, some of them are, of course, crooked banks like HSBC. I mean, I'm not sure the merchants are invested in them. But, you know what I mean? This whole financial sector, mm-hmm. which just sees it as owning the planet. And it thinks, well, okay, so now we own the planet. Mm. What shall we do with it? It's all ours. So we can decide and almost don't take a lot of notice of what ordinary people want.
No.
I mean, one of the scariest things about all this is, I suppose, is the food toxins. But at least we can look at the labels, can't we?
We can
discern what's in it
everywhere,
and what's
not. Though. Yeah, it really is quite frightening.
You know what also occurs to me is you know, water, lovely and pure, beautiful. Yeah. One thing that we can rely on. Hang on, fracking.
Oh, I just attended a seminar with Ian Crane. It's worth getting him on here. He's brilliant. He's a BP.
Because he was an ex-oil worker, wasn't he?
Ex-oil worker, and he went through the whole thing. And it is bad, bad. In Australia.
I mean, isn't it the idea that to basically deny the natural resources to a population who are disaffected and out in the countryside or whatever, that you can't even drink the water?
No.
You're going to die.
There was a farm in Australia where they drilled the well, drilled across, they drilled this down
is the
and
water,
then across.
Just a minute. It's just occurring to me this. Yeah. This water industry is just treating water like any other industry. It's trying to create scarcity. So it says, well, we will control the pure water. We don't want anyone else having any other access to pure water. They're going to have to come to us to buy it from us. Water is absolutely the basis, probably along with sunlight, of our lives.
Yep, yep.
So tell you anyway, carry on. I interrupted you there.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was talking about a farm in Australia where they drill down and then they start going across and then putting chemicals and... They won't list the chemicals that they use, but basically, and it fracks the rocks below, releasing the gas oils. But the toxicity within the area, I mean, there was a farm, and they were pumping out water, it lit a match, and then you had flames coming out.
Well, it's just poisoning the earth. Yep, what they're doing is poisoning the earth. Now, this is the same big oil companies that really have been running humanity probably for the past 200 years that are financed by the Rothschilds. Mm. They are the Rockefellers because the Rockefellers haven't given up their oil interests. When Standard Oil was broken up, the monopoly in the US in the early 1900s, all that happened was it was broken up into smaller pieces that the Rockefeller family, most of which still owned, and they still have a massive interest in almost all the big oil, I mean, particularly Exxon, there are several others, Marathon Oil, for example. They're big, big guys in this. The Rothschilds helped finance the setting up of Shell Oil. So, in a way, this is the same people who were doing the oil exploitation in the 1800s and early 1900s are now trying to poison the planet to get bit of energy out.
If they get away with it, I mean, the government has so much opposition.
They're cheeky, aren't they? They're very
cheeky.
Oh, I
don't know. You know, it's crazy. Even, I mean, you know the damage it's doing. It's all there. The evidence is there for you. Proper BP construction or construction, I'm telling you, it's bad. You know, the opposition for it's tremendous, and people campaigning outside, you know, writing to governments. Some governments have banned it, which is great. It's a great step forward. But they should not get away with this. No, definitely. Well, luckily,
we've still got democracy here in Bristol, and a former merchant venturer is now running the city. His name is George Ferguson.
Yeah.
He left the merchant venturers when he became mayor. Yeah. But then, as mayor, he still gets invited to all the merchant venturers' nice lunches and things up the promenade where they're based. And, you know, you can actually visit the promenade from time to time. I suggest people get clued up on the merchant venturers because they are the power behind the scene. You know, they have a very good public image with looking after the Downs and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But actually, behind the scenes, look where their money is, look what they're investing in, and also look at what great deal of interest they take in the politics of the city. Anyway, Steve, you also, I know you looked up recently something called The Future Is Now.
Yes.
This is very up to date, and it's from NASA. Now, I thought NASA had died off pretty much with the Apollo space program, but they're not. They're still around.
Well, this is, I pulled the document off. I thought there's nothing serious with it. But it's talking about the future strategy, the future warfare, and oddly enough, in 2025. And some of the stuff they're talking about is unbelievable.
2025?
Yeah.
Hey, just give us an example of something.
The weapons that will be used in the future war is not going to be your nuclear war. This is all ancient stuff. This is stuff like mechanical biomicrobes. You've got mechanical dust, which is distributed by aerosol, inhaled into the lungs. The dust mechanically bores into the lung tissues, executes various pathological missions. It's got wholly new class of weaponry, and at the bottom, which is totally legal. I mean, this is, and it's page after page. I mean, if you think.
Well, we've already got things like microflies, these pretend robotic flies that can buzz around, used for surveillance and to actually attack people, for goodness sake. You know, there's loads of this kind of. We've got the drone surveillance, drones hovering over our homes, drones flying around in clusters, which are actually talking to each other and then deciding what to do. I mean, we've hit a sort of. 2001 Space Odyssey, Kubrick moment where the technology is starting to go way out of control, Steve.
And they're really into this robotic stuff, human, a transhumanistic way of doing things.
Okay, what's a transhumanist?
Well, basically merging man with machine. They're obsessed with this, and those are not part of it. I mean, the virus chip is only one small step. You know, a virus chip inserted into you. Then you want to do mapping, brain mapping stuff.
And the RFID.
RFID chips.
Now, these are little chips which are able to communicate with, you might see them on some products.
Yeah.
For example, when you're taking it out of a supermarket, it goes blip, and that could be an RFID chip.
Yep.
They've got RFID chips in all these contactless payment cards now that we've been given no choice about whether we're going to have. In fact, I complained to the banking ombudsman, and they said, guess what? Nothing. No, nothing you can do. You just got to have it. Well, the banking ombudsman's useless in my opinion, certainly by that experience. Anyway, Steve, your thing is the Unassimilated Research Group on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing. That's just a Facebook group. But I know you've done a book too. We mentioned briefly last time.
Yeah.
The book is called...
Secret Prophecy, and we're about to put it out on paperback, a smaller version.
Great. And so just to remind folks, it's a Secret Prophecy is the book. It's Steve Lacey, Steve Lacey. If you're interested,
and it comes straight to the link then to the page.
And also, Steve is also on Facebook. If you're on there, you can have a look too on Unassimilated Research Group, and you spell unassimilated as you'd actually probably hope, but with two S's, Unassimilated Research Group. Steve Lacey, thanks ever so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
And Jason Yannakopoulos is joining me. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Now, Emma Wilson is in the news this week. Now, I must admit, this one slipped by me. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure it's been in the news somewhere. But who is she? Who was she? Who is she?
She is, unfortunately, a young lady from my hometown, actually. She was convicted in January for the murder of her baby son. Yesterday, Royal Borough of Windsor Maidenhead did an internal thing, and they did an internal inquiry and found out that they hadn't been. There's more they could have done to stop the death of the baby.
But Jason, you actually know her. You went to school with her.
Yeah, she was horrible. She was a horrible girl. I mean, that's nothing more than that.
Just give us a bit of an insight into, you know, what kind of a personality. Well, you're not in the same class, I take it. Were you?
She was in the year below me, but I was quite fond of one of her friends, and she never liked that. In fact, she spent a lot of time trying to get me expelled from the school.
Trying to get you expelled? How did she do that? What, making accusations or something?
Yeah, making accusations or because of my autism, setting things up in a way that I'd do something. Like on one occasion, I was invited to talk to her friend. I went to talk to her, and then they complained that I was following her around.
Oh, really? Oh, how sneaky and how nasty. So, you know, it's a shame, isn't it, that people like this who are slightly psycho-minded are not picked up a little bit earlier. Maybe this would never have happened.
Well, I mean, the fact is that the father of the baby was not somebody she was in a relationship with. Also, the baby was briefly in foster care, actually, but she never visited it, the child, while the child was in foster care.
I mean, surely that should be a warning sign.
Yeah, and not only that, when it went to trial, she tried to blame the injuries on the baby on her older child, who is only 23 months old. So this is the sort of vile person that she is.
How horrific. And also to, you know, target you with your disability and your autism, you know, pretty horrible stuff. A little bit, anyway, an interesting insight into, you know, something we can now talk about because the case is over. The Disability Living Fund, Jason.
Yes.
Is this Private Eye, I see?
It is indeed Private Eye. As it says, last November is looking as if the most friendly table people had been spared one of the cruelest benefits cut when the appeal court outlawed the government's plan to axe the Disability Living Fund.
Hooray!
Careful.
Oh.
The Disabilities Minister, the current Disability Minister, Mike Penning, has quietly announced they have now reconsidered their duties and are shutting the fund anyway.
Hang on a minute, because they've just been ruled illegal, but the government are saying we don't need to take any notice of the court, we're going to do it anyway.
Yep.
So the government is above the law.
Now, the £320 million fund enables more than 18,000 severely disabled people with high support needs to live independently, when otherwise they might need to go in residential care. Now,
this is the whole point, wasn't it, when we were talking about care in the community, and we remember the word care, because you do sometimes wonder whether the carers really are caring for people enough. The whole point was that, yes, you can be cared for in the community, but you will need quite a lot of extra money in order to survive. But it wasn't actually as much money as they would have needed to have residential care in the first place. And that was introduced, I believe, in the 1990s by Virginia Bottomley when she was Health Secretary. Care in the community, the whole point being, we will give you quite a lot of money so that you can survive in your own place. But now they're saying that Disability Living Fund is being taken away.
Yeah, it says most of the 18,000 will face a substantial cut in benefit with an average bout of £300 a month. The fund is to be devolved to local authorities, which administer most social care, but will not be protected.
Oh, so they might get the money, but there's no guarantee of it in law.
Especially
anymore.
With councils already slashing their social care budgets.
What frustrates me is that the government and obviously the police, etc., are trying to enforce the law, but then the government is subverting the law at the same time. I mean, don't they have to abide by the law, Jason?
Well, one would hope so, but
maybe we should sue them. You know, maybe we should.
Definitely.
It's pretty frustrating when things like that happen. Anyway, any more on the Disability Living Fund, or is that the end of the bad news?
Well, Penn dropped his bombs report just as a month after a new report, counting the cuts from the campaign for Centre for Welfare Reform, showed how austerity measures were failing. How austerity measures were falling disproportionately on the 4.5 million people who suffer a significant disability. I don't know, maybe failing was right on this case. Disabled people living in poverty bear four times the average burden of the government cuts.
Oh, and just a last note on disability. Dave has pulled up, our engineer, an article about the replacement for ATOS. And the article is saying, I'm beginning to wish that ATOS would come back. Apparently, Capita are taking over some of the duties of ATOS. Is that right?
Well, yes. I mean, even before ATOS is finished, they've divided the country into four regions, which ATOS are only actually running two of the regions, and the Capita are doing the other two.
Oh, okay. And they're also talking about withdrawing the benefits automatically and saying, well, we're going to keep the benefits away from disabled people until they can prove that they're... I mean, how do, as a disabled person, actually get to an assessment centre to prove that they're disabled? All things sounds to me like a bit of a stitch up, and yeah. I don't like the way disabled people are being targeted. I think we've got a whiff of fascism here in this country now, and so I think we'll probably just leave it at that. I find it impossible, really, to see why a government that is made up mostly of millionaires, that's got a fantastic amount of tax that it's not collecting from their friends, their rich friends, and big corporations like Vodafone, and instead they're expecting disabled people to pay the price. Absolutely horrific. Anyway, next item is Forex rate fixing. Forex, yes, that's foreign exchange.
Yes. This is the no inquiry into the foreign exchange rate fixing scandal would be more important than that into the conduct of Bank of England. So a deal hangs on the Bank of England's oversight committee, to which the task falls.
Ah, right. So they're kind of in charge of this foreign exchange.
Unfortunately, the people in charge of it aren't exactly made up for fit of, as they've put, fearless scourges of financial malpractice. The chairman of the committee, Sir David Leeds, said he will leave in June, which will leave senior figures on the committee like Sir Roger Carr with the responsibility. It's hoped that he will take it more seriously than he did customer complaints as chairman of British Gas owner Centrica, who had fined £2.5 million in 2011 over failures.
Guess what? He's been given a nice big job at the Bank of England as a reward for his failures at British Gas.
Yep. Alongside Carr sits Lady Rice, who is senior independent director at energy company SSE from 2007. Didn't act on prolonged and extensive mis-selling that led to a record £10.5
million. Fraud. Hang on. Mis-selling. Every time you hear that word, replace it with fraud. Yeah. That's what it is. It's amazing how even Private Eye have been convinced to use the word mis-selling. Everybody says
it is in quotes.
Ah, right. Good. Good old Private Eye. Well done.
So it says that the pair are joined on the oversight board by, guess what?
Bankers.
Oh, no. So there's going to be no teeth in the Bank of England there anyway, completely. And they're supposed to be in charge of foreign exchange. Okay, so more fraudsters running the city. Okay, Amity University. Now, first of all, well, we know what a university is, but what is Amity and who are they?
Amity is an Indian education giant who have a grand plans in 2012 for a new £100 million university campus for 15,000 students in London, enthusiastically backed at the time by Mayor Boris Johnson. And while Amity is busy building huge universities in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, its London campus so far consists of just an office in Bedford Square and sharing some rooms at Birkbeck College. It is also under the awkward name Amity University Inn, and the inn is in brackets, London, because, as it points out, the degrees offered by Amity University in brackets in London aren't actually UK degrees.
Well, Indian degrees, are they?
Yep.
Gracious Lord. I mean, one of the things that bothers me about all this privatisation of universities, Jason, I mean, maybe you, I mean, you're someone that's recently graduated from UE. To what extent are universities being privatised?
Well, it's...
And how?
Well, it's worrying. I mean, there were signs of it starting when I... when I started there, I mean, they were bringing in a government bill to allow privatisation of universities. So far, hasn't happened yet. But I mean, you could have up in the stage at the stage when you're not studying at Birkbeck College London, but Barclays College London.
Oh right, so they can sponsor courses. I mean, the thing is that they're cash strapped. Making them cash strapped means that they then have to go to big companies to get some funding, and then those companies then start determining the way that the universities go. I know they've become much more like corporations by, for example, paying their ancillary workers very, very little, and also there's been strikes by university staff who see their wages are also being driven down because they're being run in a commercial way. And we don't really want commercial universities. All we'll get is a load of drones churning out of them at that rate. But the thing that really bothers me is the way that this affects courses. I mean, things like literature courses, because you don't need to burn books when you can just take them off the curriculum and youngsters just don't get any access to them.
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it?
Holy Grail, then.
Yeah, the Holy Grail. This is an interesting one. This is a church in Spain has seen its numbers of visitors literally go up exponentially after a new book release suggests that the cup within the church may be the Holy Grail.
Really? Which church?
It's San Isidro Basilica in the city of León.
Okay, Jason, good way to leave it. The Holy Grail, you finally found it. Thank you.
Thank you,
and we'll
Tony.
See you next week.
Thank you, Tony.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.
Now it's time for our weekly-ish technical discussion, that is computers, IT, and that sort of thing. And we're having a bit of a change this week. Elia Pablo is going to be asking Ed Lander, who's our tech correspondent, a few questions about things, problems she's had with her computer. But to start with, Ed, why don't you just tell us what you do? Because we're curious.
So I work for an English startup. We're developing next generation wireless technology. So we're developing a prototype at the moment. And it's scheduled to be rolled out to the general public perhaps by 2018, maybe as late as 20.
Hello, Ed. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Alia.
Well, I would like to talk today about the role of the hackers, which I think it's a role that have been changing since the creation of internet until today. I would say at the beginning it was seen as this bad person that creates an informatic virus and would infect your computer, while after WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, it seemed like heroes, kind of sort of heroes that are against the opacity of the government and the mass media. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe in the past the hackers didn't have a purpose. You know, their job, their hobby was to try and understand technology by breaking it in a way, reconstructing it. And I think lots of people who have these skills have finally realized that with the fact that a lot of information is now stored on computers, particularly secret information, that they can use their skills to bring this to the public's attention. So yeah, exactly, with the likes of Anonymous, they're kind of anti-heroes in some eyes and just outright heroes in other eyes. Yeah, they were quite viciously attacked and to some degree shut down when they proved that they could make all kinds of trouble.
So then you think they are these kind of anti-heroes that by spying the government or the other sorts of companies, they are like letting know the people to know like this kind of classified information. But do you think it's more like the right of the transparency, or is more an attempt against national security in some sort of cases?
That's a good question. I think some people have very strong opinions both ways. I'm generally against secrecy in all its forms. I don't really believe in the concept of national security. I think in the 21st century, the ideas of countries and armies, nationalities, patriotism is redundant. So for me, these, for example, NSA teams, I feel like they're doing harm to society. So I'm happy with any group who exposes anything to the public that they feel they should know.
So you would say they can show whatever it's like they need to know, but let's say if there is some information about military attacks, things like that, maybe that should keep for the government, like classified?
I genuinely believe that it's only through having complete transparency that you can stop war, because it's the way that you get to understand why governments are scheming, why they are creating conflict. It exposes the fact that it's purely about profit and empire. And so when you can make that clear to the public, and more importantly, you say to the governments, you no longer can plan in secret everything that you're thinking we're going to know, I think they will change their behaviors pretty quickly. You know, I don't think any politicians would be seen in a good light if they were. It was proven that they were pushing to start conflict purely to get, say, resources in a new region of the world. You know, like starting a war for oil resources, for example.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think that's why, like, lots of people see WikiLeaks like a kind of a good thing that show us lot of hiding information. What do you think about the GCHQ and the NSA? Are they hackers?
They're doing the same thing as Anonymous. They have a different master. They have a different purpose, but certainly they're doing the same things, using the same techniques and skills. You know, these are highly trained, highly skilled individuals, many of whom might be hand selected. You can imagine, you know, I'm speculating here, but you can imagine if somebody was caught hacking a government and showed quite amazing skill, that they may be recruited. You know, they may be offered a way out of prosecution to say, you know, come work for us. So yeah, they got some clearly very, very bright people. And if any of them are listening, I would urge them to change sides, change course, help the human race, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure that the governments have hackers on their own, even the companies. They spy on each other. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's when it starts getting tricky to speak so freely about, I think. But I think it's pretty clear that many corporations not only hire private investigators, but work with, you know, militias, and some of the biggest corporations. You know, there's documented proof that they are working hand in glove with sovereign security services, facilitating deals/bribes in dangerous parts of the world. You know, they're securing business in conflict-ridden parts of the world, despotic regimes. You know, so certainly the corporations are, yeah, they're very, very much involved, and obviously they're interested in knowing what each other are up to. You know, take away their competitive advantage. So I'm sure there's probably quite a healthy business in espionage in the corporate sphere, but I have no exposure or experience of that myself.
How do you think we should worry about this? Why? Which implication has in our own lives?
You could say that they can. It could be a bit of a free market, that they're just going to war with each other, and they're just fighting for our business. But I think monopolies are not good for anybody. You know, if we want to have good and fair prices for consumers and good quality services, we want open markets, and we want healthy competition. And if a company gets very rich off a particular innovation or something, then they may be able to bully the competition. I'm not so keen on that. I think, moreover, there's a worrying trend now of private security companies like Stratfor, who are outside of the government, and they are performing private investigative behaviors there, bugging hotel rooms, vehicles, maybe, probably, allegedly hacking, you know, breaking the law to try and get information about, maybe if it's in the corporate sphere, it might be politicians, you know, and these guys can be hired or simply just paid for information. So for me, that's a worrying trend, because at least with the NSA and GCHQ, once we know what they're doing, they have a responsibility via government to a people. You know, there's a democratic process there, whereas these corporations, there isn't. And you might find that all of these leaks move this kind of work away from the government just because of the public outrage. That may be the trend we'll see. And that would be interesting to see what happens in these companies when they're exposed. You know, do the companies get shut down? Do they give the one of the executives a golden parachute and business goes on? You know, will they get out of control? Will they start mobilizing armies? You know, will we no longer have sovereign armies and they will all be corporate armies? It's a scary world, I think.
I think it would depend on the interest of the government if they think the information got by the companies is useful for their own benefits. Do you think so?
Yeah, they will certainly, if these corporations can offer skills or methods to find particularly useful information, they will obviously buy it. You know, there's a clear market for information. And as we've seen, hacking's a very popular tool. So if you can assemble an army of the best hackers in the world, then you can get access to basically anything, and information is invaluable, it's priceless, I think. So yeah, I think it will go this way.
So it seems that right now information is power and hackers have the key of the paradise.
I like the way you put that. Definitely, yeah. There's a phrase that is, if you can shine a light on power, then it will amazingly quickly vanish. And certainly, yeah, people with high-tech skills will be in high demand. And again, I can only urge those with these skills to perhaps forego a lot of money and perhaps think about the ethics of what they're doing before they go there.
Well, hopefully some of them are listening to us and then they will change sides. Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you, Alia.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
He's here again. Jeff Sparks is back after a two-week break. Jeff, what were you up to?
I was just travelling around, visiting various places, visiting friends.
North, south, east, west?
South, mainly.
Okay. What we got this week on the What's On Guide, then?
Okay, this is your What's On Guide from Dialect, starting with Friday, 4th of April. The UK's first and finest Nirvana tribute act, Novana, will be performing at the Fleece in St. Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £10 in advance, and doors open at 7:30pm. Into Saturday, 5th of April, Boy George will be performing with support from Skinny Lister at the O2 Academy in Frogmore Street, Bristol. Tickets are £24.50 in advance, and doors open at 7pm. Into Song of the Week, and I present Band of Skulls. This group formed in Southampton in 2004, and to date have released 3 albums, 2 live albums, an EP and several singles. This is from the latest album, Himalayan, and there's a track titled Asleep at the Wheel. Band of Skulls with Asleep at the Wheel from the latest album Himalayan. For more information you can check out www.bandofskulls.com. Staying with 5th of April, 2 Bucks Rock Productions presents Buckfest, featuring Screamer, Venus Mountains, The Texas Flood, Defy All Reason, Black Tomosus, Spiral Dive, Beggarman's Beard, The 8th Bridge and Alien Stash Tin at the Brunswick and 7 Park Road, Gloucester. Entry is £3 on the door, and first band is on stage at 3pm. Finally, into Wednesday, 9th of April, the Wild Hearts will be performing with support from Von Herzen Brothers and also Hey Hello at the O2 Academy in Frogmore Street, Bristol. Tickets are £20 in advance, and doors open at 7pm. That was all from me. Thanks for listening, and have a good week. Take care, and goodbye.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, that's all for this week. Dialects, Bristol's first weekly podcast for your MP3 player, broadcast on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 a.m. every Thursday morning. We're online at www.dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to this week's guests, Steve Lacey. His book again is Secret Prophecy. He's that Bristol artist. Also to Elia Pablo and Ed Lander for their tech discussion, and Jason Yannakopoulos. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, do please contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733, and you'll find them on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. So, that was Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now. Thank you.